We believe that this is the inerrant word of the one and only true and living God. It is the only infallible rule for our faith and its practice. So hear now the word of our God from Revelation chapter 17, beginning in verse 1. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute, who is seated on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality, and with the wine of whose sexual immorality the dwellers on earth have become drunk." And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was full of blasphemous names, and it had seven heads and 10 horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and jewels and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the impurities of her sexual immorality. And on her forehead was written a name of mystery, Babylon the Great, mother of prostitutes and of earth's abominations. And I saw the woman, drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. When I saw her, I marveled greatly, but the angel said to me, "Why do you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman, and of the beast with seven heads and 10 horns that carries her. The beast that you saw was, and is not, and is about to rise from the bottomless pit and go to destruction. And the dwellers on earth whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world will marvel to see the beast, because it was, and is not, and is to come. This calls for a mind with wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman is seated. They are also seven kings, five of whom have fallen. One is, the other has not yet come. And when he does come, he must remain only a little while. As for the beast that was and is not, it is an eighth, but it belongs to the seven, and it goes to destruction. And the 10 horns that you saw are 10 kings who have not yet received royal power, but they are to receive authority as kings for 1 hour together with the beast. These are of one mind, and they hand over their power and authority to the beast. They will make war on the Lamb, and the Lamb will conquer them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And those with him are called and chosen and faithful. The angel said to me, "The waters that you saw where the prostitute is seated are peoples and multitudes and nations and languages. And the 10 horns that you saw, they and the beast will hate the prostitute. They will make her desolate and naked and devour her flesh and burn her up with fire. For God has put it into their hearts to carry out his purpose by being of one mind and handing over their royal power to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. And the woman that you saw is the great city that has dominion over the kings of the earth." The grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever. We are coming now to the end of the book of Revelation. We're in the home stretch. We've seen the seven seals. Well, first we saw the seven letters to seven churches. Then we saw the seven seals. Then the seven trumpets. Last week we saw the seven bowls. And in the midst of each of those visions, there was always a pause, right? To show you God's people in the midst of what was happening, right? During the seven seals, there were the 144,000 that were sealed with the seal of our God and kept from the tribulation and judgment that was poured out on the world. During the seven trumpets, there was the proclamation of the gospel by the two witnesses. During the seven bowls, there were the saints gathered around the sea of glass mingled with fire. And there was always, in the midst of these visions of what is happening during this present evil age, there was always a glimpse into how God was preserving his people. Well, now we come to a final juxtaposition, if you will, between that which is counterfeit and that which is genuine, that which will fade away and be destroyed, and that which will endure forever. And so today we have the prostitute and the beast. Later on, we will have the bride and the lamb, or the king. Right? Well, you have the counterfeit today. Later on, you will have that which is genuine. But it's interesting that the counterfeit can fool us so very easily, because the counterfeit is what we would see as normal. After all, this prostitute and this beast have been active since Christ ascended. And just as an example, I thought of the last 100 years, give or take. Have to extend it a little bit more now. But remember, in 1914, there was a great crisis. An Austrian archduke was visiting Bosnia, and a man named Gavrilo Princip happened upon him. And this was very lucky for Mr. Princip, because he had gone to Bosnia. The name of the city is escaping me. It'll come to me later. Sarajevo, thank you. He had gone to Sarajevo with the purpose of assassinating Archduke Franz Ferdinand, and he was successful. This precipitated what was called the July Crisis, where there were telegrams and communiques sent between all the major powers, and everyone mobilized, and everyone marched off with the guns of August. Coincidentally, around this time, there was a British explorer that was making his way to Antarctica, who was getting updates on the war, as many as he could, until he got out of range of the telegraph. Well, his expedition ended up going quite badly, and he was only barely saved a couple of years later. Once he was rescued, the first question he asked was, "Who won the war?" The answer that he was giving was, the war is not over. Millions are dead. Europe has gone mad. The world has gone mad. See, because that's what nations hungry for power do to each other. And with modern industrial warfare, it was a nightmare. But not to worry, America would come to the rescue. After all, our president at the time said the world must be made safe for democracy. Unfortunately, he was a Presbyterian. Woodrow Wilson actually had no problem thinking that he might be setting the terms that would bring about worldwide peace, a post-millennial utopia, if you will. And so America joined the fight in 1917. By 1918, the war was over. In the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, they ended it. Sometime later, they signed a treaty. They set up a League of Nations. It would all be over. We would all live in peace forever. This was the war to end all wars. That's how it happened, right? It's not as though exactly 20 years later there was another war. It's not as though within 20 years of that there was the war in Korea. It's not as though shortly after that there was the war in Vietnam. And even after Mr. Gorbachev did tear down that wall and America emerged victorious. Well, did it end there? No. Evil forces in this world continually, over and over and over again, come back. This beast on which the woman is riding comes back over and over and over again. But of course, I'm getting ahead of myself, aren't I? I've been talking about the beast that wields the power of the state, the power of the sword that would lead mankind into conflict with one another. But what about the prostitute herself? Well, we read in verse 1 that one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality, and with the wine of whose sexual immorality the dwellers on earth have become drunk." This great prostitute is said to be seated on many waters. In other words, it's not one nation that is under her sway. It is all nations that are subject to her seduction to one degree or another. The kings of the earth, it is said, commit sexual immorality with her. Prostitution is often used in the Old Testament for what? Idolatry. And it's used for idolatry because the idolatry in the Old Testament involved engaging in prostitution. And so the prophets will often accuse the people of Israel of engaging in, forgive the word, whoredom with other gods. And so now John is using this analogy here. What he is saying is that the kings of this earth are selling their souls in order to gain the power that the woman promises. After all, she sits on the beast. She controls the beast. That beast, by the way, what is it? Well, the beast has blasphemous names everywhere. The woman and the beast want to be God. I remember this story. This is calling to mind the Garden of Eden, isn't it? Because mankind did not learn its lesson after the garden. Mankind has continually sought to sit in the place of God. The woman sitting on the beast with blasphemous names is clothed in fine apparel, gold and jewels and pearls, and she has the golden cup with the blood of the martyrs and saints. We see this team of the woman and the beast seeking to sit in the place of God, persecuting the people of God, because there can be no rival gods. They will sit on the throne of God. They will exercise the power of God. They will enjoy all of the pleasures that are offered by sin. But again, we still have yet to fully explore who the beast is. The angel describes the beast as the one who was and is not and is about to rise from the bottomless pit. The angel says that the beast was. Well, can we look back in history and see manifestations of this beast? Certainly. After the flood, after God poured out his wrath on humanity such that the world was destroyed, what is the first thing that they do once they get their bearings? Noah's own grandson leads them in building a city that would have a tower up to heaven so that they could sit on the throne of God. And they even think that they're going to outsmart God in building this tower because they make it waterproof. As though God hadn't promised to never destroy the earth with water again. But of course, then God confused their languages. They were scattered, and that was brought to nothing. But then we see in Egypt, a worldly power with a king who claimed to be the incarnation of one of the gods, persecuting and putting to death the people of God. But then, of course, God, with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, delivered his people, and the horse and his rider were thrown into the sea. Years later, there was another kingdom, Assyria, who, though she was the rod of God's anger, nevertheless considered herself to be great and powerful. And with a haughty and proud heart, conquered God's people, scattered them to the wind. Babylon, who is the image that John has in mind as he describes this woman. How did Nebuchadnezzar describe Babylon? Is this not great Babylon, which I, by my power, have built? Babylon, which had, in the days of Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, held a banquet using the vessels from the house of God to worship gods of silver and gold. But of course, Babylon did not last. They were conquered by the Persians, who, just read the book of Esther, the Persians were not good people. Ahasuerus does not come off looking like a good guy in that book, but they did not last. They were conquered by the Greeks. My goodness, read Greek mythology. Also not good people. They were conquered by Rome, and it goes on and on and on. You see, this beast was and is not and is about to rise. Every time this beast is defeated, he comes back. He changes forms. He changes tactics. He changes locations, but he keeps coming. This beast is described as having 7 heads and 10 horns. Both of these numbers indicate completion, but in completely different ways. The number 7 symbolizes perfection. In other words, it encompasses all the anti-Christian kings from history. When I was reading in Hendrickson this week, he tries to pinpoint each of the 7 kings and how they had all reigned, but now the king was not there, but then one day it would come back. And I think he's missing the point that the point of the number 7 is that it is all-encompassing. Just as the 7 churches in the beginning of Revelation, yes, they were 7 particular churches, but it was also meant to lead us to the conclusion that these letters were to the church in all of time. So the 7 heads, the 7 kings, indicate all anti-Christian kings for all of time. But then also the number 10, it symbolizes immensity. Right? There are so many of these kings that at the end of the age will rise up in persecution of God's people. And so thus, there's not 1 specific king or 7 specific kings or even 10 specific kings that are in view. This is describing worldly power that will one day, because they are obsessed with the pleasures and the power that the prostitute promises, will rise up against God's people. They do so habitually. You can see that throughout history. And yet at the end of the age, there will be a concerted effort to finally win the war once and for all. And the world is led astray by this. We see that in verse 8, where it says, the beast that you saw was and is not and is about to rise from the bottomless pit and go to destruction, and the dwellers on earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will marvel to see the beast, because it was and is not and is to come. The people of this world are led astray by the beast, because the beast wields all of the power. I heard a man recently talk about the halls of government and call it the halls of all actual power in this world. That is how the world views this. And the pleasures held out by the prostitute, well, they are real. The Bible never says that sin does not offer pleasure. Sin says that those pleasures are fleeting. But it never claims that they are not real. And yet, John says, this calls for a mind with wisdom. We must remember that the beast is destined for destruction. We must remember that the pleasures held out by the prostitute only last for a season. And we must remember that we are the people of the Lamb. For how does the vision describe the Lamb? It says in verse 14 that all of these kings symbolized by the beast will make war on the Lamb, and the Lamb will conquer them. How does Christ execute the office of a king? Christ executeth the office of a king in subduing us to himself, in ruling and defending us, and in restraining and conquering all his and our enemies. So yes, the beast and the prostitute, they have all the power of this world, and they make war on the Lamb, and they come again and again and again. But the Lamb will win. He will conquer them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those with him are called and chosen and faithful. Just as those gathered at Babel had their language confused and thus they were scattered, so the beast and the prostitute, though they were given one mind to accomplish God's will, at the end, the 10 horns that you saw, they and the beast will hate the prostitute. They will make her desolate and naked and devour her flesh and burn her up with fire. For God has put it into their hearts to carry out his purpose by being of one mind and handing over their royal authority to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. Just as the people in the days following the flood could not oppose God and gain the victory, so the powers of this world at the end of the age will be defeated. All of this is according to God's intended purpose. Remember the scroll from the beginning of Revelation. God will accomplish his purposes. God will make all things right and will make all things new. The Lamb is the rightful ruler, and he will reign forever and ever. I can't help but think of this in terms of one of the greatest stories written in the 20th century. And I should say that the author would be horrified that I'm going to use this analogy. But in the Lord of the Rings, there's this city called Gondor. Gondor had a king at one time. His name was Isildur. But Isildur was led astray by temptation, the ring of power that promised him greatness and power. And so Isildur kept the ring. And thus Gondor had no king for years and years. They had a steward who was a cruel and evil man. But one day, the rightful king returned. Aragorn returned and sat on the throne as the rightful king. Well, this world was created good, and there was a king set over this world. His name was Adam. And he was led astray by the temptation that you will be like God. Since that time, the world has been under the sway of the dragon, who employs the beast and the false prophet and now the prostitute to do his bidding. But one day, the rightful king will return. That second Adam will come again. He came the first time. He bore the penalty for our sins to deliver us from the domain of darkness. He will one day come again in glory to judge the living and the dead, and his kingdom will have no end, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And so as we live in this present evil age, where the prostitute would lead us astray, and the beast would hunt us down and put us to death, where the powers of this world are arrayed against Christ and the church, let us remember that we serve the true King, and those with him are called and chosen and faithful. For Christians, this is the word of the Lord. And thanks be to God. Let us pray.